So each of you had about a minute to introduce yourselves. You'll have about 2 minutes to respond to each of these questions. And the first one is actually going to be from an audience member, because this is a good way, I think, for us to start and get to know a little bit more about what each of you wants to bring to Lansing. And so this time let's start with Josh and work our way back over here. The question, Josh, for you and the other candidates is, what do you plan on accomplishing during your term?
Yeah, thank you. So there are three things I really want to focus on my term. And the first thing is obviously mental health. I want to make sure that we have a mental health counselor in every single school across the state of Michigan, because at this time it is imperative that we start having those hard discussions with our younger generations and with those who are getting ready to graduate into the working world. Because it's not discussed hard enough. And as somebody that lost my brother to suicide in 2011, I understand the pain and the hurt that it brings, not just to the families, but to the communities that surround those families. So that's my first priority, number one. Secondly, I want to make sure that we have Michigan-specific labor laws protect the workers of the state, because we don't have that. We only rely on federal labor laws, and they are too weak at this point. So what I want to do is pass laws like requiring your schedule to be done 2 to 3 weeks in advance so you can plan around your life, so you can make sure that you have time to coordinate with your significant other to go pick up the kids, to take them to, you know, doctor's appointments, things along those lines. And thirdly, finally, what I want to do is I want to expand the outdoor recreation income for the state, because currently it generates $2.2 billion, and I think it can generate much more. As an avid rock climber, as an avid outdoorsman, as an avid hunter, there is an untapped potential for the outdoor recreation in the state, and we need to start utilizing it more, especially as we live out in these blue water areas. We need to keep our forest green, our water blue, and our air clean to make sure that this part of our economy stays strong, because this is the biggest bulk of money, especially for Michigan these days, is coming through recreation, and going forward, it will continue to be outdoor recreation. So those are kind of the big three things I want to tackle, involve education, our labor, and our environment. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Debbie, what do you want to accomplish in your term?
One of the major reasons that I'm running is I'm currently a trustee for SC4, and I felt as state senator I could do more for all education in Michigan than just St. Clair County Community College. So one of the things that we need to do is better fund our schools, for sure. They currently, on average in this district, receive about $7,800 per student, which may seem like a lot of money, and the current legislators are very happy to tell you how awesome they are that they gave the schools and the students more money. And it sounds good until you find out that the average in the country is $11,000 per student. And then you start figuring out how come things are gone so badly here in Michigan for our public education. We also need to, part of that about getting special interests out of our legislature, is to get rid of the DeVos effect that we've had on our public education here in this state. So education is a big concern. I'm also concerned about our water, and that means a lot of things. That means that our kids deserve to turn on the taps and take a drink of water from the faucet. That means they get to go swimming in our Great Lakes. That means they get to go fishing and then eat the fish that they catch. That means that their aquifers are not completely dried up from fracking and other things like that. So water encompasses a lot of things. We also need to work on Michigan's economy. 75% of our Michigan workers have stagnating or declining wages. That's 3 out of 4 people. That's a lot. The average Michigan family is one paycheck away from disaster. That's not helping our kids, and that's not a stable economy.
Gary Eisen?
I really want to focus on business, education, and your right to protect yourself. As a business owner, small business owner, we are the backbone of the economy. We employ the most out of more than the big businesses do. So we have to take care of our small business. And I want to fight for them any way I can, whether it's lowering regulations, making it easier to get loans, but I want to fight for our small business. I think we have to definitely increase our skilled trades. I am a product of skilled trades. I went to school in Minnesota because they are years ahead of Michigan in skilled trades education. And I think we need to introduce that. I just found out it was pretty cool that I was talking to another state rep, and they're going to pass this law or bill that allows industry professionals, someone like myself, who's an expert in a field, to actually teach in a public school without a teaching degree. So I think that's a major step and that in the right direction to get skilled trades more. The average age of a skilled worker today is between 46 and 56 years old. Okay, where are these young guys stepping up? Okay, they're not there. They're just not there. Okay, and your right to protect yourself, defend your Second Amendment, okay, allow you to have those rights that to hold your ground. I'm a champion of that. I think that's real important, especially in today's society. So those are the things I'm focusing on, plus a whole bunch of other stuff. And I plan on working, you know, with both sides the best I can to get the job done. So thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Representative Hernandez.
Yeah, I'll start with kind of one, I guess, big overarching goal, which is the fiscal health of the state of Michigan. Obviously, being able to drive the economy toward growth, which being on the appropriations side, I attend every year two revenue estimating conferences, and you see growth in the state of Michigan right now. And it's so important that we have a healthy budget. And we've seen what it looks like to not have a healthy budget in Michigan, what it looks like to have significant debt. And we've done a lot to pay that down. And the reason that's such a big overarching goal is our fiscal health is how we're able to afford public education, how we're able to afford to fix our roads. An example of things that pop up, whether it PFAS, that has come up and been in the news. And we were in a healthy position where we were able to put $60 million into PFAS, unexpected. But we were in a place of fiscal health that we could do that. Secondly, As I said earlier, roads have become a huge priority for me being in the position I'm in, and I'm sure we'll get into that. But also our infrastructure beyond roads. Dan's talked about whether it's broadband. That really drives whether job providers want to come here. What is the quality of your infrastructure? And third is kind of a personal thing from my background in commercial architecture. Gary brought up the age of the workforce and skilled trades. I've seen the effect of it right now on pricing for building and projects. We need to be able to properly train our youth to go into skilled trades, open those opportunities and availability. We did spend a significant amount of dollars this year on the Marshall Plan for Talent that starts putting career coaches into schools and starts opening these avenues for our kids, but we need to put an emphasis on the trades as well.
All right, thank you. And Representative Bowers.
Thank you. I guess the top priority is continuing on the path of fiscal health that we've got the state back on. I often talk about the state living within its means, just as we have to in our own households. Living within your means brings security. It brings security to our families, and it brings security to the people of the state. When you see a state, you know, paying down its debt and putting money in a savings account, a rainy day account, you know, we've got $1 billion now in our emergency fund or a rainy day account. It sends a message to the families and the potential employers that Michigan's going to be a safe place to invest your time and your family. So that continues to be a high priority for me. It's protecting the taxpayers' dollars and making sure that that we find a way to continue to pay off our debts. Auto insurance is a high priority for me. I've had three tries at it now. Learn a little more each time about how to maybe get that over the finish line. It's becoming an economic competitive issue for our state to have the highest auto insurance in the region. Let alone the country. Is just when someone's looking at moving back to Michigan and they find out that their car is going to cost 2 to 3 times more than where they live currently, we don't want people having a second thought about anything like that. So I know we can do better than what we're doing today, and it's one of my top priorities to bring more choices in the auto industry and hopefully get that price down. Another area of emphasis really goes back to the opportunities, and we're all seem to be talking about that same thing. But continuing on this path of creating more options for people beyond four-year college education, and looking at the trades and the skill trades that have such great opportunities available to people right today.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. Let's stay on education and talk a little bit about talent attraction and retention. It's critical to improving Michigan's economy. And the way to that, a lot of people say, is through intensifying education and job training. So do you agree? And how would you support these efforts to improve education and job training in the state? And Debbie, because you mentioned education to start, let's start with you. What would you do to intensify education and job training to help retain talent in Michigan?
Well, one of the reasons that education is such a big issue is because it, just as you said, it does retain and attract a talent to a region. So it has a real economic impact on any given area, the level of education and the quality of the talent, if you will, that's available there. So we have underfunded Michigan public education for more than a decade. So the figures that I gave you earlier are very similar to the per student funding they received in 2008. So we've spent 10 years going pretty much nowhere. So when I talk about funding education, that's really the big deal right there. In terms of skilled trades, everybody wants to talk about skilled trades, and that's great. We do have programs already right here at SC4 that works directly with employers, so that employers will come in and students will get specialized training, and then at the end of that training there is a job waiting for them with employers. I'd like to expand on that. We have that in other areas of the thumb as well.
Thank you, Debbie. Dan Lowers, I'm going to ask you to respond to the question next.
Sure. I'm trying to remember the question exactly because I'm
talent attraction and retention being critical to improving our economy in Michigan, and the way to do that is through intensifying education and job training. Do you agree with that, and how would you support those efforts?
Yeah, absolutely. Supporting the efforts really gets into, you know, finding the ways to be effective in you know, expanding opportunities for both you know, college education and the skilled trades. I was just visiting with someone before we walked in here with an innovative program that's beginning to help people that have coming through a chemical dependency, you know, coming out of chemical dependency, and giving them an opportunity to work in skilled trades and learn that education and maybe pick up a trade. The other one is, you know, we talk about becoming the mobility capital, and that's one where we get, you know, that's where we're seeing, you know, more college people coming to Michigan than we're losing, which is a big change. I think that's a, you know, that engineering hub, if you will, we have in Southeast Michigan and other areas of the state is a big part of that. And not to get off of education, but because it's related to the mobility issue when we're talking about auto insurance, that's gonna play into our identification as being the mobility capital of the country. We have lots of opportunity. It's really, a lot of it is connecting the dots and making the most out of the resources we have.
Okay, thank you. Josh Rivard, I'll direct the same question to you.
Yeah, so I think one of the things we're not talking about is to ensure that we have high quality workers and high quality talent pool to grab from is we need to have high quality teachers. And lowering the standards to make sure that, you know, it's easier for teachers to get in is not going to be the way to do it. What we need to do is make sure that our teachers are being properly paid for the work they do. My mom is a teacher. They have spent the last several years fighting against their own employer, the state government, to make sure that they just get the money that they so rightly deserved and earned. So what we need to do is stop attacking our teachers, stop waging this war on education, and make sure that our students and our teachers are properly funded and know that we have their back, because currently they don't think that. And that's how you make sure that you have high quality workers, is by having high quality teachers, so that they can pass their knowledge and their education right on down to the students. And it's a great idea that they're bringing in experts in their trade skills field, but you still need a teacher in that classroom because the students are going through psychological development periods that are critical to their growth that need to be understood by a professional, which our teachers are. So we need to start there. And then we also need to make sure that we are including new revenue sources that we can pay for everything for our teachers. And that means that we have tax loopholes from large corporations that they're exploiting. We need to close. That means we make sure that people are paying their fair share into their local community schools. We also need to make sure that as much as you may not like it or like it, Proposition 1 is coming down the pipeline and it looks like it's going to pass. We need legislators in there who are going to say, okay, the people want to have legalized recreational marijuana. Let's make sure the money is going towards education. Let's make sure that the money is specifically being used for drug and alcohol education to make sure that our kids stay safe. And let's make sure that we're also using the money to put the special, the mental health counselors into every single school. Because if you want to have a healthy working body, you need to have healthy teachers and healthy schools. And that's where we need to start, is there. As we don't need to, you know, with the tools we have right now, we need to stop looking 5, 6, 7 years down the pipeline and start reacting with the tools we have now. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Gary Eisen.
Well, I think one place to start is to maybe direct our youth into taking a career that they could actually get a job in. Okay, a lot of these kids go to school, they rack up $100,000 in debt, and they can't get a job because they have the wrong direction. Someone should tell them that, you know, this degree is not going to pay anything. All right, and education, you gotta be smart about it. Okay, and another thing is, okay, we don't want to wait until these guys are in their 30s to train them how to weld or be an electrician. Why not in 7th grade, 8th grade? That's when I started, okay? But you know what it is? It's the mentality of our education telling that if you want to be a welder, you're a low-class citizen. Okay, don't be a welder. Don't be an electrician. Don't be a plumber, okay? No, be an engineer, you know, do all this stuff, okay? You got to change that narrative. Encourage a young man that, or a young girl that wants to get into the trades. Okay, but we don't do that. We don't do that, and we're lacking that. I had shop class in 7th grade, 8th grade. Okay, we were taught how to take a motor apart, put it back together. Okay, so I think the whole idea, we just have to switch our mindset a little bit. We have to, and to retain, yeah, you get good jobs in Michigan, you're going to retain the people here, the college students, the engineers, all that, okay? So I think a good place to start is to maybe rethink how we're teaching our kids. Thank you.
Gene?
Yeah, well, I think Gary closed with something I wanted to talk about a little bit. A lot of this retention of our talent starts with having good opportunities, and Dan talked a little bit about the Center for Mobility, being able to make sure the state is flexible and on the cutting edge of these things. You know, as you watch the auto industry change, there's tech states that are looking at, they're drooling over the opportunity to steal an industry from us. And we need to be on top of that and flexible and ready to adjust to those jobs. And you even look across Sanilac County in the 83rd District and in the Thumb of Michigan, a lot of agriculture jobs are becoming very highly technical. You know, I just saw a guy post a picture on Facebook the other day. He's working in his combine, and he's got a picture of the screen that there's not a thing on that screen I understand what he's doing. So, you know, we need to be flexible for those things. I want to talk a little bit about a couple specific instances where we are doing things, and one of them came out of the Appropriations Committee and hasn't hit the whole floor of the House yet, but it came out just a few weeks ago, and it was an opportunity to work with our community colleges to have the state create a funding program for the community colleges to be able to train workers for our employers that are here. So the employers can come and say, I specifically need people in this area, and work with that community college to get that training. One of the other areas we haven't talked about is, I think, flexibility in the classroom. And that's one of the challenges when we talk about skilled trades in our classrooms is, what are we going to cut? And I think we've become so prescriptive with what's happening in the classrooms, and we've tied up all of this time, and then you realize if you want to have the flexibility to do that, and you know, what's going to go? Is it going to be a year of foreign language? Is it going to be this? Is it going to be that? And we've become so prescriptive with our curriculum. We need to be more flexible to what the needs are in that local area. So we've done programs where you can forego a credit in this area if you're going into a trades field. And those are kinds of things that have passed in the House. So.
Okay, thank you. We could probably spend the next 3 hours talking about education. I do have one more education question. It was suggested, too, and it's probably a good idea, to clarify who's running against each other. You all introduced yourselves, and I think that it was you all introduced where, you know, who you represent or want to represent, but let's just clarify because we are hearing all these voices. So once again, Dan Lowers is currently the state representative in the 81st district, but is term limited, so is running for Senate as a Republican in the 25th district, which is currently held by Phil Pavlov. He's term limited. So Dan Lowers against Democrat Debbie Burgoy for state Senate. Those are two of the voices that you're hearing tonight. And then in the 83rd district, current Republican Representative Shane Hernandez is running for re-election. His opponent is not here tonight, so he is the only voice for the 83rd district. And then for the 81st district, Gary Eisen is the Republican running against Democrat Josh Rivard. Did I get that right, you guys?
Yep.
Okay, good. I'm glad. So I hope that clarifies for everybody. One more education question, because this was something that I heard the first person to walk in the door this morning or this evening and talk to the first candidate that he saw. He said, what's your take on charter schools? So I'll keep it as simple as that. What do you think of charter schools? And let's start with Dan Lowers.
I did answer that question earlier today, and I said, you know, I think charter schools provide a great opportunity where in places where there may be a lacking of opportunity. So if you look at Detroit Public Schools, a number of charters have started down there, and it gave families choice. It gave kids a choice of where they could go to school and gave them options. So I think they provide a valuable resource where we need choices. You know, I think we have to ask questions if maybe we think we're getting charter schools where there are already plenty of choices, but I think they've done a lot of good for education.
Debbie Burgoyes, charter schools.
Nope. I'm not surprised that Dan thinks they're great because one of his endorsers and donators is Great Lakes Education Project, a direct DeVos link, and a big fan of charter schools. So here's the thing with charter schools. They take money away from public schools, number one. Number two, many of them are...
Schools are public schools, too.
Many of them are for-profit schools. And when you're working in a rural area, like the 25th District, all the way up in the Thumb, it's a real problem to have those kind of other options and still have a functioning public school that's being drained of funds. So that's why I'm not a fan of charter schools. The other problem with charter schools is that they frequently, what happens is that same $7,800 that they've been so generous with will go to something like an online school that does not have to worry about the heating and the cooling systems. They do not have to worry about the internet speed or capabilities of their students. They don't even have to provide the computer for their students. So that's what's happening with our tax dollars into private enterprise. No.
Shane Hernandez.
Yeah, my view doesn't differ a ton from Dan's. I think the important word here is that there's a choice. So, that parent has a choice to send their kid to that school, and if it's not providing the service they want, then they can choose not to send it. I do think maybe Dan started touching on it a little bit, but I'm not somebody who wants to. I think there are people out there who want to push charter schools into areas that isn't necessarily organic. I think that them coming up in areas where there's not quality service being provided is one thing, but actually trying to push them upon areas is a whole other thing that you need to be conscious of. But I support them as a choice where the parents see that need.
Josh.
What do you mean by not providing high quality service in that area? You guys are the legislature. You help run the public schools. If it's not high quality service, you fix the public schools that are not adequately helping our students. That's how this works. Personally, I'm in the same boat as Debbie. My mom's a teacher. And instead of charter schools offering more choice, the only thing it's done is eliminate resources for our public education. All it has done is make sure that those kids down in Detroit who have to go to DPS because they have no way to go to charter schools, they don't have the transportation, they don't have the income to do it, they haven't gotten more choice. They've been pigeonholed into staying in one area and being forced to stay in that school. Now, I think charter schools should exist. I think they're fine. I don't think they should receive a penny of public money because they don't have the same oversight as a public school. They don't have the same quality resources that a public school should be offering. And as Debbie mentioned too, is they are backed by the Voss family, which only wants to deregulate public schools so they can teach their own agenda. Public schools just want to teach students so they become better workers, they become better citizens, to become better Michiganders. There's no ulterior motive other than just making sure that we pump out good students. Charter schools, as much as they help vocational schools, as much as they help out for businesses and everything like that, there's always a bottom line that they have to worry about. Public schools, our bottom line is the student, our bottom line is the teachers. So we need to make sure that we stop taking funding from our general education fund and spending it on frivolous things that aren't related to public education. We need to keep the money in public schools because that is where it's hurting the most. Those kids who are underserved, those students who don't have the accessibility to go out to places and go to other schools, and especially too for our teachers who are waking up early every single day and coming home late to make sure that our students are educated. Public money stays in public schools. Thank you.
Gary Eisen, charter schools.
Well, I'm for anything that will educate a young man or a young girl, whatever it takes. If a charter school works better than a public school for a young student, then I'm for it. Education is the key. Now, sometimes I think it's more like, what are we arguing about? What's good for the teachers or what good for the students? So education is the key. If a young man or a young lady doesn't fit into a public school system and they can make it in a charter school, then that's a bonus. Okay? Choice, like Shane said, is the key. You have a choice. We live in America. We have a choice. You shouldn't be forced to go to a public school if you don't want to. I sent my kids to St. Mary's private school. Okay? They did fine. I had to pay for it, okay? But public school would have been fine too. Didn't matter. They would have got a good education in either one. So whatever's good for the students, I'm all for.
All right, thank you. Let's switch from education. A lot of people have been asking this, and this was one of the questions the chamber wanted to ask as well, and that is, how do we go about funding repairs for the roads? How do we go about funding repairs for the roads? Shane Hernandez, let's start with you because you're on the Transportation Committee.
Do I have an hour?
No. No.
So as everybody in this room probably knows, there was a package passed in 2015, a road funding package, and I'm sure they know because the registration fees probably reflect it more than their gas tax reflects it. Half of that package was registration fees and gas tax. Half of that package was general fund commitment. As an activist before, that happened before I was in office, I actually spoke out against that funding package. And it wasn't that I don't think there needs to be more funding for roads. It was that I felt like there needed to be changes within the department and how we're doing things before you give them that funding. Now you've given them the funding, good luck getting them to change their process. So those things weren't tied to it. But that funding is there, and we're in the third year of implementing it. We have two more years of phasing that in. And this year in the House, because of our fiscal health, we were able to put in a $175 million supplemental in. That means kind of like an emergency funding. And we were able to fund $300 million above and beyond. So one way you fund it is just good fiscal health and fiscal policy in finding those dollars. But the roads aren't just about our funding. They're how we're getting competitive bids, how we're qualifying our contractors, what materials we're using, what methods we're using, how much waste is there into the department that's never actually getting to a road. And those are the things I've focused on. I don't think I have time to get into the details of them, but there's so many other focuses that need to be had there. I think the funding mechanism that is there right now and our ability to put additional funds through good fiscal policy is how we need to address the funding of our roads.
Dan Lowers, I'll let you take that question.
Sure.
Next.
Well, I think one of the important things that we've done is, you know, by improving our state's economy, we've had the additional money to commit to roads and infrastructure, and we've been doing that. And some people think we should be adding even more than we have been. You know, prior to my starting in legislature, the legislature had never used general funds for road construction. We began that the year I was there, saying we need to put additional dollars in. But right now, if you talk to road crews, they're at maximum employment. They're looking for workers, and and if they can find workers, they'll hire them. But when it comes to taking on more jobs, so when we were going through that discussion, I actually had contractors tell me, don't add $1 billion to it right away. Do it incrementally over time, because if you throw too much money out there too quickly, there's only a couple contractors that are big enough to handle that kind of work, and we'll all end up working subcontracting for them. So an incremental, as we've done, has worked out well. We've kind of got the labor force maxed out as it is right now. So we're continuing on that path. We're 400 million, we're going to 600 million. The other focus is what Shane was talking about, and that's reforming the department. But it's more than just the transportation department. You know, working in Lansing, I've come to see as a business owner and manager that we have a tremendous problem with our bureaucracy. We have a lot of people who have responsibility without authority. And so you're a manager working with your people in your division or your office, and you're responsible for the output or the performance, but you don't have the authority to make the corrections that are needed in redirecting people's efforts at times. So that's something that I continue to work to change. We really see it played out very vividly in transportation, but it's going on everywhere. Child Protective Services, the manager in charge there, we had this discussion a year ago, and here we have a terrible audit because of that difficulty of being able to direct your labor force.
All right, Dan, thank you. Debbie?
Shane mentioned the law that was passed in 2015 to increase taxes and fees. You may recall that proposal was placed before the general election, and the general election voters turned that down. And our legislature went ahead and said, too bad, people, you're paying for it anyway. I think that we need to take a really good look at the state's budget and see what they're doing with the money that we do provide for them. And again, I feel that they haven't been good stewards of taking care of what we need to have taken care of, like our roads. Nobody wants to be paying increased taxes on gas. That's a regressive fee. What that means is that it greatly impacts people of lower incomes over higher or average incomes even. Same with the fees. The fee is the same on your vehicles, your registration annual fee, no matter if you're driving a Cadillac or a junker. So if you don't make very much money, that's a real, real huge burden for you. Another regressive tax, which the voters turned down. So in order to fix our roads, now they've passed this, let's get to it. I'm sure there's money that they're squirreled away for something else up there that we could apply to fixing our roads.
Gary Eisen.
Well, boy, I really can't add that much that these guys didn't add.
We're at an all-time high of like $4.1 billion for roads. My problem is mostly I think we got focused on more of quality roads instead of quantity roads. We got to look into making a road last 20 years instead of 5 or 6. Okay. I think the problem is it's easier to say, gee whiz, I fixed 100 miles of road, instead of saying I fixed 50 miles of road that are going to last a lot longer. Okay, it sounds better. We fixed a lot of roads, okay, but they're not lasting. So we need to get more bang for our buck. I mean, I just saw in the news today where they got to redo 75 because something wrong with the road. Now they got to tear it all up and do it again. Okay, so oversight. Where's that money being spent? How wisely is it being spent? So, yes, it's going to be a problem, and it's always going to be a problem until we figure out how to build a good road. Thanks.
Joshua?
Thank you. And I think this discussion about funding for infrastructure goes further than just our roads, and especially out here in the Blue Water area. It goes into things like seawalls. It goes into things like our riverbeds. It goes into things like ferries, things like that. So I think there are inefficiencies that exist in the system, yes, that we can cut out, but ultimately I think we are still underfunding our roads. And I think after talking with many of the city managers or talking with many local officials in the area, what I found out is more than anything is the problem of revenue sharing, in that the state has all these state offices that then requires the county commissioners to find the funding for, basically taking it out of their very local municipalities' funds. So ultimately what you're left with is, a good example is in Marine City, I just went to the millage meeting for some road repairs they have, and they have to keep going to their constituents and asking for money when the fact of the matter is that there are some large corporations like CVS that are not paying their fair share in taxes because they're exploiting tax loopholes. Close those up, get some of that money. And it's not going to be a lot of money on CVS's end, but it'll be enough to help out the local officials fix some of their local roads. Another thing is, too, is you want legislators in the office that are going to abide by the laws that the people are going to pass. As I mentioned before, Proposition 1 is coming down the pipeline. That money should be used for education and infrastructure only. Those are the only two places I want to see money for marijuana legalization come to. So that means that is a new revenue source of potentially hundreds of millions of dollars being pumped into our roads. That means we can build and have the funds for high quality roads, but we don't have the money right now for it. So that's one way to help pay for it without raising a single tax on any of us. There's two ways actually for that. I also think it's imperative that we really take a hard look at the tonnage laws, because I know everybody says our 18 wheelers, they can carry the tonnage and not worry about it. I think the problem is the frequency, especially as a place that is right next to Canada, 94, 69, 75, all that, our local M59, M29, all them, those are affected by the amount of freight that comes in and out of Canada every single day. And you can argue all you want about the weight and everything like that, but ultimately what we have is a lot. And we need to re-examine where our priorities lay, and I think train freight could be the next big step in Michigan's economy in repairing it.
All right, Josh, thank you. I'll throw this one out because I just got two cards with the same question, so it's certainly on people's minds as we're talking about the roads. Russ says, no one's addressing heavy semi-loads destroying our roads, and somebody else says, why do we let heavy trucks use Michigan roads that other states deny? Yeah. And so let's, Josh, start with you, and do you think that we need to not have some of those heavy trucks on our roads?
Yeah, we need to reduce the volume more than anything, too, because especially as the trucks are going over in such large quantity at such high speeds in some of these areas, they are, you know, causing erosion to the bedrock, which the road ultimately lays on, which, you know, frost heave, all that stuff we learned in science class. It's causing a lot of problems. So what we need to do is be focusing on turning our freight into train lines. Because as much as those are convenience for us, you know, out on M59 or M29, having to wait for the trains, they ultimately save our roads so much more money, because that is where most of the damage is coming from, is from the micro cracks that come from the freight lines, from the trucking lines, that then water gets into, freezes, and causes all the problems that we love so much. So expanding too also goes into, if we're able to expand our railroad lines to include more and heavier freight, that can help not only our local industries and our statewide industries, but it can also help our tourism. Because if we're going to build freight lines, why not passenger lines? And I know it's been tossed out before, and people keep saying it's pie in the sky, but this is America. We do those big idea things. We chase after those crazy things like building an international highway system or having high-speed rail going from Detroit to Traverse City or all over the thumb. So ultimately what we need to do is I don't know enough about the weight, but I do know a lot about the amount of trucks that are coming across the border. And what we need to do is reduce the amount and make sure those roads stay open largely for our regular pedestrian traffic. Thank you.
Shane, I'll jump over to you to address the problem of heavy trucks on our roads.
Yeah, well, first, I think there's some misconception that the average truck is carrying those loads, and it's actually nowhere near that. But this is a conversation I've been willing to have in our committee, and I held a committee on it. And whenever you post a committee where you're going to talk about weight limits, a lot of people in Lansing freak out and get scared about it. But it's a worthy conversation to have. And, you know, so in my world of commercial construction and design, you give me a design load, and I design the building to hold it. And we have a design load, and we should design the road to hold it. So we need to make sure that that's what's happening. But if you bring the MDOT engineers in and you go through, and these experts in this industry, and you go through the studies about axles and frequency, which, quite frankly, if we lower that load, the frequency is going to go through the roof with some of these, all of them will tell you that they believe that our roads are designed for that load. They believe that the frequency would cause more problems. And I think it's a design issue. We need to make sure we're building quality roads, but not just that. when a lot of people think it's just that asphalt or just that concrete when we talk about a quality road, it is truly the base. We live on a peninsula on a swamp. It's keeping that roadbed dry. It's building it up, having proper ditches, and having that base done properly so that there isn't water sitting in that roadbed all the time. And we do have a lot of that in older roads that were built. We have issues with that in Michigan right now.
Gary?
The reason why our weights are high in Michigan is because of the car industry. We needed to haul heavy coils across Michigan, and that's why Michigan is higher than the other states. We're something like 120,000 pounds for trucks. In other states, it's like 73,000. These trucks coming into the state are not overweight. The trucks coming in from Canada are not overweight. Okay, it's usually just the interstate transfer of steel coils from factory to factory. Okay, so it gets back to road construction. All right, we know these trucks are 120,000 pounds, and like Shane says, we just need to design a road that's going to handle that. Okay, Europe's been building roads for hundreds of years and they don't fall apart. They got heavy weight, okay, because they build the roads thicker, they go down below the frost level. Our roads float in Michigan. How come a road that goes over an overpass or a bridge, they don't wear out? They're on foundations, okay? They're on footings, all right? We build our houses on footings so they don't move. But we don't build a road on footings. We let it float on top. And what happens when heavy weight gets on something that floats? It bends, it twists, it cracks. So they'll go back to that whole mindset, okay? I'm in the business too, okay? I work with cement guys, engineers, everything, okay? And then we talk about this. I've talked to a lot of guys from Dan's excavating. They're building roads, okay? And they agree with me. They're not building them strong enough. Okay? It has to go back to some good engineering. So, thank you.
All right. Debbie, too many heavy trucks?
In Marine City, we get a lot of ships that unload their rocks, ballast, whatever, and then the trucks, there's a lot of truck traffic. And so for quite a long time, on one of the main roads there, there were actual two tire track ruts down the lane, always, until they finally fixed it. So for me, that is a heavy truck issue, for sure. And I know that in other states, they do charge for weight. And they do have weigh stations that we used to have here in Michigan, and seems like we shut them all down. I never see them anymore. So people ask about funding, how are you doing this and how are you doing that? Yeah, we probably need to make the roads stronger, but we also could charge for the excess weights here in this state that we do see quite a bit. And that is what they do in other states, but for whatever reason, we've chosen not to do that here.
Dan Lowers.
Thank you. It really does come down to engineering, and I'm all for all kinds of transportation. Now, I've been trying to get Michigan back in the shipping business on the lakes and have not been successful in that effort yet either, but I believe it can be done. Yeah, you engineer for the load you want, and you know that the ruts in were caused by poor asphalt, and that's something that's been addressed. It's all about engineering. It's really about drainage. If you want to keep the roads intact, Canada's weight limits are about 5,000 pounds less than ours. So we cross the border and run to 402 and take a look at that road and look at the ditches, I guess, specifically is what I would say. You've got to shed the water or you can't hold things together. So engineering and design is that. But one thing I do want to address, because the proposal one's been talked about a couple of times and how we're going to use this money. I want people to understand, proposal one passes, because it's a citizens' initiative, we cannot change it in the legislature. So wherever the money is designated in that initiative is where it's going. We cannot amend it, we cannot change it. So it's already set. That's one of the reasons that I hear a lot of people talking about this is going to pass and we're going to have to work with it and we're going to have, you can't change the specifics of a citizen initiative. So the 12 plants per person, where the money goes, all that stuff is set. No, we won't change that, and that's why if we do want to go down that road, probably taking it through a different approach would be more appropriate.